Hey friends, welcome to episode 559 of the My123cents podcast. This is a non-wrestling episode, starting at the beginning of the year, and I explain this every month. I don't know why, but I do have my wrestling background. This room is kind of undergoing a transition, and so I will have another part of this studio, if you will, that will be non-wrestling related, but I'm not quite there yet. But once a month, I try to do a non-wrestling topic, quite frankly, to just maybe engage with and get other people listening and or watching. If you are watching on YouTube, you notice that I am wearing a polo shirt that says got the NBC Peacock, the number 15, WOWL Florence. And this is I've put a poll up, people voted, and all three topics eventually are going to be discussed here on the non-wrestling versions of the podcast. But the early TV days is what folks wanted to hear about. So I'm going to talk about my time I spent, for those who are new to this podcast, I spent 22 years from 1997 until 2019 in the TV news business. Actually, there was a year before that in 96. That I worked behind the scenes at a TV station in St. Louis called KMOV, CBS affiliate there. But this will kind of tie in with the college years a little bit. And I've talked a little bit about this in the past too. So I'm going to just get everybody caught up and on the same page. When I was in college, I wasn't not 100% sure what I wanted to do, what I wanted to be. I knew I wanted to do something in mass communication. At one point early on, I wanted to be a radio disc jockey. However, where I went to school, Southeast Missouri State University, for whatever reason, the radio classes were not very popular. I did some volunteer work at the campus radio station, but to take classes, they were not being offered on a regular, consistent enough basis for me to continue on. So I shifted gears and went into media. I'm sorry, I'm trying to remember now the exact title of it. It was mass communication. Man, I am drawing a blank. I think it's media studies is what my major technically is. And I can't believe I'm drawing a blank, but anyway, I am. So I really took kind of a hodgepodge. I took some advertising, I took some public relations, some corporate video. So I learned how to record video and edit, but I was not good at editing video at all. And in fact, when I got my first job in TV at KMOV, I was working behind, again, it was behind the scenes stuff. It was the exact title. My first stint there at KMOV, started in 1996, in June of 96. And I was a broadcast assistant, was the title. And I was basically the teleprompter operator for the 6 and 10 o'clock newscasts. And so the producers would print the scripts. I would go take them off the printer. And back then, they were printed on 4 sheets of the carbon paper. And so I would separate the scripts into 4 piles. The producer got a copy, the director got a copy, and each of the anchors got a copy. And they were color-coded. And so I knew that one anchors were blue, the other anchors were pink, and they were both male anchors. So that always turned into a thing. But anyway, that's kind of how I got my introduction into TV news. Because, like I said, at SEMO, there was no TV. At that time, there was no TV broadcasting curriculum. But I knew that I wanted to try the TV thing. And honestly, when I first got there, I wasn't 100% sure that that was going to be for me. And I actually contemplated and thought about going back to school to get my teaching degree. And I often wonder, I mean, I would not be, I don't know that I'd be doing this podcast. I don't know, because doing the TV news thing gave me an extreme amount of confidence that I did not have before. And so it made me less leery, apprehensive, shy about being around cameras and talking to people. And I'm still introverted in ways, but it really opened me up to being more willing to put myself out there and do the podcast. So I don't know if I'd gone the teaching route. You know, who knows what would have happened. I know that I would probably be much closer to retirement than I am today, but that's a story for another time. But I did the I ended up sticking around and at KMOV, there were several reporters there and photographers who would let me go out with them on news stories. And in St. Louis at the time, I don't know if it's still this way or not, but this was 1996. It was all unionized. And so you could not touch the equipment. Like I could not, I literally, even just picking up a camera was frowned upon because I was not in that union. You had to be in the right union to touch or participate with that equipment. And I was in one of the unions because back then, eventually I went from being that broadcast assistant teleprompter operator to a production assistant where I was on the floor as a floor director, so wearing a headset, listening to the director and giving the anchors and the weather person cues, letting them know what camera they're going to be on, letting them know how much time was left before the end of the newscast, a commercial break, whatever the case may be. Or you were either on the floor or you were in the tape room. And basically, as the tape person, you were getting all of the cassettes that were, you know, bigger than a VHS tape, but, you know, we would get those tapes in order. You'd have a rundown, put them all in order, and then you would just hand them off to the tape operator who they had four different tape decks. He'd slide the tape in, cue it to the right spot. You as the tape organizer would make sure that it was matching the time code that was on your sheet and it was the right story. Sometimes there were mistakes. You see the long video play on the newscast. That's all human error right there. And so that's my then next, let's see, I started doing that, I think, in October of 97 or 96. And I did that until October of 97. And so in that year, I was also substitute teaching. Because this was a part-time gig and the hours varied. Sometimes I'd do the morning show, sometimes I'd do the evening show, sometimes I'd do the noon show, sometimes I would do the morning show and the evening show, or do the evening show and then the morning show. Those days sucked. But anyway, that was kind of the gig, and I was glad to get the experience because that's what I was really looking to do. I knew I was not going to break in St. Louis as a reporter. I just didn't have the ability or the skills to do that. And so I did that. I went out with reporters. I was making resume tapes. They would let me, you know, write, rewrite their stories and stuff. So I was doing that, putting stuff together. Because back then you put it on to a VHS tape and then you sent those off to TV stations all around the country. And I literally, I mean, all over the country, Oregon, California, Texas, New York, Minnesota, Alabama, Mississippi, Florida, everywhere. I was sending tapes out everywhere and I wasn't having any luck. I was getting quite discouraged. And that's when you know, the thoughts of maybe teacher, those things started coming in because I was newly married at the time. And you know, my wife was very supportive and very, you know, had my back and was helping me in the search. And back then there was a thing called Media Line. It was subscribed to it. You could get online and look, but you also called. And I would call that line all the time or get online and look. TVjobs.com had a subscription to that and just looking to find any openings. And then, like I said, just sending off tape after tape after tape. And I went on a few interviews. I even at one point got in the car and drove to St. Joseph, Missouri and to Topeka, Kansas, and just made and booked a hotel room and just kind of spent the night in that area and went TV station to TV station with my tape in hand, just kind of showing up, hoping that maybe there'd be something. I had one news director that sat down with me and watched the tape with me and gave me some feedback critiques. You know, they weren't hiring at the time, but it was just that grind of trying to get in any way that I could. And so obviously that those markets didn't work out. Nothing with that happened. And I remember it was the fall of 97 and early October. And I had gotten a call from a TV station in Florence, Alabama, WOWL. And I remember I was at my job in St. Louis at KMOV. It was my dinner break, and I had called back then on your no cell phone, but your landline. You could we didn't have an answering machine. We had it was voicemail, and so you could call that voicemail and get your messages. And I remember calling and doing it and getting the message that Todd Napier, the news director at WOWL, was interested in doing an interview, wanted to do it as soon as possible. I was ecstatic. And so I called him back, set it up. My wife had her wisdom teeth removed that morning. We literally got in the car and drove from St. Louis to Florence. He had said, if you get here in time, because it was about a 6-hour drive from St. Louis, if you get here in time, come watch the 6 o'clock news and we'll go out to dinner. And we got there, I mean, just before the newscast started. I dropped my wife off at the hotel. I went to the TV station. I watched the newscast. He anchored it. He was the news director. He anchored the newscast. We went to dinner and we ate at this Italian place in Florence. I can't remember the name of it, but great food. We're sitting there talking and keep in mind, again, this is 1997, but he had said to me, what are you thinking in terms of salary? And at that time, most of the places that I was looking at, the starting salary was between $19,000 and $22,000. And so I threw that number out there. And he said, we can offer you 12, maybe 13. I was making more part-time at KMOV than that was going to be. And I remember feeling like this crushing defeat. But here's the misconception of TV news, especially in local markets and especially in small markets. Florence was part of the Huntsville, Alabama market, but Huntsville, Alabama was my at that time my market 80, 81, somewhere in there, which is not bad out of 214 or 217 markets. But Florence was on the other side of town. People or other side of the state. It was like a 70-mile gap between the two communities. And when Florence first, when WOWL was established, it was before any of the other TV stations. And allegedly, the owners built in Florence thinking that that was going to be the booming metropolis. Well, it ended up being Huntsville Space and Rocket Center. All of the technology, all of that ended up going to Huntsville, and that's where all the other TV stations went. Which also presented an awkward thing because they also in Huntsville had an NBC affiliate. And as you can see on my shirt, if you're watching, WOWL was also an NBC affiliate. So there were two competing NBC affiliates in the same market. But if you didn't have, if you in Huntsville, you were not watching WOWL. The range was very small. But again, it's part of that market. If you had cable, in Florence, in the Shoals area, it was called the Shoals, Muscle Shoals. It's in Home Sweet Home, Alabama. If you had cable in the Shoals, you could pick up Huntsville stations, but that was the only way you were going to see that. Otherwise, you were kind of stuck watching us. And then there was an independent station that was actually not very good either. But I remember going back to the hotel after this dinner meeting, telling my wife, it's 13, $12,000 to $13,000 is the salary. And without missing a beat, she said, you have to take it. This is your foot in the door, get the experience, and then, move on. Because that's how TV news works. You go someplace, especially if you are in a small market, you go and get that year or two of experience, something bigger, and hopefully something better. So I went to the TV station the next day, and this was, I mean, he hadn't offered me the job. He was just telling me what the price range was going to be, but I had a really good feeling. I went back to the station the next day and did the official interview, but really, sat together over dinner, pretty much asked all the questions and whatnot, but ended up going back to the station. And I'm not sure, I'm trying to remember. I think it might have been a day or two later. Called me back and offered the job. And I, of course, gladly accepted. And my first day there was in November of, no, I think it was November 2nd or 3rd. My last day at KMOV was on Halloween 1987. So Friday night, we got up Saturday morning with a moving truck, my vehicle, my wife's vehicle. My parents went, my in-laws went, and my best friend and my brother. And we headed south and went to, trying to remember. Yeah, my brother went too. We headed south and went to Alabama. And we get there because we had gone down in between. So when I got the job, we drove back down there and found an apartment and went back home and obviously moved. And we get to the apartment. I was behind because I was with the driver of the moving truck. My wife and in-laws got there before we did. And the girl that was living in our apartment was not moved out. All of her stuff was in the middle of the living room floor. She was supposed to be out. They were supposed to come in and steam clean the carpets and all that. So anyway, they're scrambling to get her out. They go in, they steam clean the carpets. We wait until Sunday morning to move our stuff in because the carpets are wet. Wake up Monday morning, and at this job, most TV stations, you see their news vehicles driving around town. Well, this place didn't have, so you have to drive your own car. So I get up Monday morning, go out to my car, and I have a flat. And I'm panicking. So I end up driving my wife's car to work. She ends up a couple of days later getting a job at a daycare there. But anyway, she's like, take my car and we'll get this taken care of later. So sure enough, I did that. And I remember my first day there was there was a murder investigation going on. One out, actually, she ended up being the receptionist at the TV station and eventually salesperson. Her grandfather had been killed, and we didn't know it at the time that it was her grandfather. But that was my first day there, was going out and shadowing with another reporter, Jennifer Millwright, who was the and I'm still friends with her on Facebook and keep in touch. But she was the reporter and the 6 o'clock. No, maybe she. Yeah, I think she did the 6 o'clock news, but with Todd. And so we end up going, and she's kind of showing me how the cameras work and kind of what they do, their protocols and what I think, this was TV folks will understand. I mean, this was small market of small market kids. There were four of us. There were four reporters. It was a part-time weather guy and a sports guy. And the weather guy literally came in. His name was Randy Paul. He was a radio guy. He would come in around 5:30, do the 6, then he would come back and do the 10, like right before the 10, he would get there at 10 o'clock. And then he would record things that they dropped in the Today Show. We didn't have a morning show. We didn't have weekends. It was literally 6 and 10 Monday to Friday. No vehicles, drove our own cars, one-man band, which means, you take the camera out, you go out, and now they call that or the buzzword that they're calling now. Back then, it was one man band. Hit the ground running, going out, getting as many stories as you could because you're filling content. We didn't have computers either. Typewriters. Everything was done on a typewriter. And so there was no Googling. I think we had a newsroom computer, but I don't think Google was even a thing back then. But so yeah, it was, you pull out the yellow pages, you would call and set up your stories. You had a foldable map in the car that you would get your directions from. And we had scanners, little handheld scanners. So we heard police activity, would hear that, and we'd get in the car and head out and go figure out what was going on. And remember, I hadn't been there probably more than 2 or 3 weeks. And a firefighter, a prominent firefighter, had died of cancer. And they were doing his memorial. And right before the 6 o'clock news, so they wanted me to go and, no live truck, no way to feedback video. So, like, if you had to go to something, you do it, and then you bring it back, edit it, and then take that tape, run it to the tape operator, and then they would play it. And so this firefighter had died, and they were doing a procession for the funeral, and his casket was on the back of the fire truck, and it's a big scene. And I remember going. Truck comes by, and I thought I hit record, and I didn't. I was recording, and then I pushed it again, and I was not. I would remember then hitting it to stop recording. Well, then it starts recording, and I freaked out because this thing had gone past me and it's down the road, and I got to soak it back to get it onto the news for the six. I was panicked, freaking out, and I got very small clip. You know, I was able to get a shot of it from down the road or whatever, but it looked incredible. Now, I am going to get fired. I'm going to get in trouble. I'm screwed. We did have a computer in the news because now I remember getting back, and Todd, the news director, and Eddie, the sports guy, were sitting at this computer playing a hockey game. And I'm like, I'm trying to explain. It's like, I mean, he was so chill and so laid back. And it was like, hey, it's okay, man. Don't worry about it. We'll see. And so we were able to salvage the little bit of video that I did get. And I had gotten some interviews and stuff. So we were able to put something together. But man, I'm telling you, this looked, I look at the year, almost 2 years that I was in Alabama. I guess I was there June to, or I'm sorry, November of 97 to June of 99. And so almost 2 years. And it was kind of like grad school. It was kind of like getting that education because I didn't have that experience in college. So I was using all of these experiences to kind of build up that resume. And so, you know, Todd eventually ends up leaving that spring of 98. And so Jennifer became kind of the assistant, or became the news director. She was the assistant news director. She gets bumped up. And then she eventually, and so before she left, though, I got this. My wife had started a scrapbook for me. If you're watching, you can see this. It's a memo on handwritten on WOWL station from the general manager, Tom Sheen, who says, "Kevin, effective Monday, I'm raising your salary to $15,000. I'm looking forward to working." And so got that bump, that first bump. And so a couple of months later, that was in April when I got that raise. And then in June of 98, Jennifer ends up leaving the station. And so I get bumped up to news director. You know, again, it was a very small station, so there wasn't a whole lot to go with. And so I was kind of next in line, if you will. So I became the news director and overseeing things and hiring people. And, you know, it was my first taste of news leadership, if you will. And again, I'm still learning the ropes myself, trying to figure things out. Well, around this time, too, we start learning that the guys that own the station, Bruce Lumpkin and Tom Miller, are two businessmen out of the Atlanta who own this TV station in Florence, Alabama. Tom, as I mentioned earlier, was the general manager. Well, I don't remember the exact time, but at some point in the course of this, Tom leaves the area as well. He leaves the station. And so, and you know, while I'm working there, you know, I'm getting all this experience. I'm interviewing people. Again, that scanner, that handheld scanner, go out. Know, that job was the first time I saw a dead body. And was in a little boat, got sucked under a barge in the river right there, not too far from the station. I heard it on the scanner, went down there, and saw part of it laying there on the beach that they recovered. And it's those kinds of things, you know, that you really have to prepare yourself for. One day you're covering, you know, the grand opening of a new bank, and the next day you're covering death and destruction. And that is the one side of the news business, not the one side, but that is part of the news business. I think that people want to get in there and be on TV or be famous or be a celebrity or be recognized at the mall or whatever the case may be. Well, you're telling people stories, and sometimes those stories have sad endings. You know, that was one case where that happened, but there were a lot of other things that happened, you know, one time we heard a drug bust. It involved a small child, baby, and the people that were living in this apartment allegedly had the drugs in the child's diaper and the diaper bag, tried to get out that way with the kid when the police arrived. They got busted. And this was a big bust. Four people were involved. Four or five. I think it was five. Three men and two women. And I remember getting the call and going, and the police would walk them from the police station all the way across the parking lot, across the street, and then into the detention center. And so they would always call us to get the perp walk, the suspects walking the handcuffs. And I remember getting their camera on my shoulder, didn't screw this one up. But man, that first guy walked out the front doors and saw all the media out there. It was me and the Huntsville station. They had bureaus all in the shoulders too. And that guy said, F mother effers. And then every word out of their mouth the rest of the way across was F this, F that. And so, back then, that's just the way we did things. We got the video of them, ran the story, fast forward several months. Turns out the police didn't have the proper, they didn't, read them their rights. They didn't have the right warrant when they went to make the arrest. And all five of them got them. No charges. Charges broken. And so we ran a story. We ran a retract, or not a retraction, but we ran the story that these five that had been arrested, showed their mugshot, showed them walking. They are now free. They are, police messed up. They're probably 2, 3, 4 weeks after that, I'm standing in line for lunch at Hardee's. The cashier gives the two guys that are two people ahead of me a look. And I'm just kind of watching, I'm being observant. Back then, we didn't have phones to be on and be distracted. And those two guys turned around and looked at me. And now I'm putting it together who they are. These are three of the five suspects in that case. And then they started like, hey, ran that story. And I'm like, no, we also ran the retraction and said, that you guys have been acquitted. Charges have been dropped, whatever, I guess not acquitted, but the charges have been dropped. And they didn't believe me. And I'm like, it's true. We really did. And so they followed me. The two guys followed me out to my car. And I remember thinking, oh my God, this is not going to end well. I'm going to get my ass kicked. They're going to, do something to me. And so I drove around town for a little bit. Feel like they weren't following me anymore. So then I went back to the station. I did pull the story that I had it ready to go in case they really wanted to argue with her, they've got an attorney involved or whatever. We ran the fact that they had been with the charges. So those are some of the memorable stories from working in Alabama. This TV station, too, by the way, was in a residential area, it was in a neighborhood. There were houses around. And in fact, the owners, the original. Trying to remember that it is escaping me. Someone from the office listening to this remind me of their names. But anyway, they had a house right there by the station. Well, they wanted a pool. They had gone on vacation and the people were coming to dig the pool. Well, the contractor for the pool screwed up. They dug that pool out in the front yard of the TV station. So this TV station had a swimming pool as well, and we would swim there. So if that was kind of a fun, interesting thing, probably my guess would be one of, if not the only TV station in the country that had a in-ground swimming pool. And so we would swim or go up there on the weekends and hang out and do whatever. Remember one time there was a bad storm and we lost power. So no power, no backup, obviously. We had the basic equipment as it was. So we ended up just spending the rest of the afternoon swimming until the power was restored. By then, the storm moved through and we were able to go out. course, they had the handheld scanners that looked like something did go on, but it was just a different time. It was a great experience. I remember again that feeling of anticipation and eagerness because it was my first like full-time job in the real world, if you will. Newly married, gonna provide. Going to Alabama, we're moving. It's a big move. It was, I think, I remember standing in my parents' driveway right before we left. We had gone over to their house. We'd go over there every Sunday for dinner. I remember telling my parents, I was 24, I think, at the time. And I said, I will be back in St. Louis in 2 years. I predicted 2 years. It never happened. It's what, 20, almost 30 years later, 28 years later, and I'm in Southern, so, and I've learned, so, plans change, as they say. I had a goal in mind. I wanted to win an Emmy by the time I turned 30. That never happened. So I just remember that first year and a half of working in TV news as being an exciting time. So it was new, it was exciting, the possibilities and all the things that came along with that. It's pre social media, pre smartphones, and all that good stuff. And so, I mean, we busted our asses at that station to get content on the air. Again, without having that computer, if you're in TV news, you get it. Our rundowns were handwritten. It was a blank sheet that had spaces to put the slug of the story and then the time that it was going to run, and you would back time it back. So at the bottom of that sheet, I would put in, because you produced, anchored, reported, shot video, you did it all. And eventually, I did the new break along with all of it. But you would take your in time, which on 6 was 6:30, and at 10 it was 10:35, and you would put that in, and then you would back time it, so you would go up that column, and you would subtract the time of each story that you were forecasting that story to be to get to the top of it, and the goal was to have it hit right there at 6 o'clock. It didn't really work that way. Sometimes the director would add a commercial break or put a PSA in, or something along those lines, or we might have to get heavy, we'd have to drop something. This is also, and I think I've told this story before, but this was also the station where I infamously dropped the up. We were not getting any communication from the director at the time, was not talking to me, or my co-anchor wasn't telling us what was going on. That we would toss to a video that was supposed to be sound, and there was no sound. And so they would just come right back out of the camera. And again, we're not sure what's going on, so we're just trying to do this. And so when there finally a soundbite pops up, and I can see it's the superintendent of Alabama schools talking on the screen, I said, "What in the fuck is going on?" And I just hear in my ear, having my microphone. And I just kind of sunk in my chair. I panicked. And I didn't know what to say. I didn't know what to do. And my co-anchor at the time, Beth, turned to me and said, "We need to get that air check as soon as this." So the air check was what they reported. And it saved them for a certain. So as soon as the newscast was over, I got that tape. I didn't get into any trouble at all. The boss, by this time, Tom, who I talked about, was gone. And Bruce, one of the partners, was kind of living in the Shoals during the week and then going back and forth at random. And this story, this podcast is, I'm sharing kind of some of those fun memories of that experience, of my time there. I wouldn't trade that for anything. I loved it. And, 6 years ago when I was at WSIL, we actually, my last day at WSIL, we were leaving vacation to Gulf Shores. I wanted to detour through the shoals and just see the area. We hadn't been there since then. So it had been 20 years, almost to the day, that we had last been in the area. So as things were kind of going on there at the Owl, and it was called the WOWL, called it the Owl. They used to have, they leaned deeply into the Owl in the 50s and 60s with the Owl theme. There was an Owl on the bridge, and it was just, again, it was a time where young, professional, married, no kids, just kind of living life and having fun and doing the things that so were available there, in the Shoals, driving to Huntsville, driving to Nashville, kind of hanging out, chilling, doing whatever. And it was just kind of a different vibe. And that's, I look back on that, and this was a good time. It was fun. And now, this story, Alabama doesn't end now. And so, as time went on at the Owl, we were being told that the station, again, it is NBC affiliate, the NBC affiliate. They don't want to. And they want to broaden the range of the, that was the goal, to broaden. And so we start hearing about this startup network called ESPN. And so we find out that the Owl is going to become a UPN affiliate. Along with that comes a change in call letters. It's not going to be the Owl anymore. It's going to be Sunset. So UPN is going to roll in, broadcast, have a bigger tower, come out of Huntsville. We're told at the time that while there's not going to be news people, we're going to help you guys, take care of you. We'll need promotions people, we'll need sales people, so you guys can do that and use our equipment still to create your resume tapes. And if you don't want to stay, then you can make those tapes go. And I'm talking literally about four people that's left, four full time. And so we're all confident that's the way things are going to go. Well, one morning, I'm on our call the NBC affiliates in the southern region, of Alabama, parts of Tennessee, Mississippi. We would get on a call, and everybody would kind of talk about what they were working today, and they would request something, they would put that story on the feed so we could all use it. And so I'm on that call, sitting in the newsroom. One of the NBC affiliates, I can't remember where, he says, "Hey, Florence," they just called him by affiliate or by the city. He said, "Hey, Florence, was your general manager in a car accident last week?" I have no idea. And they said, "Oh, well, we heard he was, and that it was really bad." And so I get off the call, and I go talk to Carol, who is our HR person. And I said, "Carol was Bruce in a car accident last week." Bruce is one of the coworkers driving back and forth. He had left that previous day to drive to some ceremony for, and I think it was back in it for interference. And she kind of wouldn't answer my question. And then a little later that day, Gary, his partner, said, "Come in." We had a station right there where he was heading back, died in the car. Apparently falling asleep at the wheel, lost control, and basically hit the back of the cinema. We were devastated. Bruce was a nice guy. He was a great guy. He was friendly. He was the one that kind of told us all, when this all switches over, have jobs, promotions, sales, whatever it is, and for however long you need it, you got your back for a family. And we all, believe that. Bruce was again, came off as a very genuine, loving guy. And so I don't think it was very much longer after that. I happened to be up at the station. It was on a third thing. I had stopped in for something. Gary was still there that evening. He was talking to Mark, who was my phone. And he goes, says to me, "Evan, do you know anything about this?" I'm like, "About what?" And so Mark says, "Bruce had told us that we stick around, yada, yada." And he goes, it's just true. You say this. It's, yeah. Gary said, and I, to this day, June of 19, he says, "Well, unfortunately, we don't have a." And they like that stayed right at least. I looked at them, that was still available. And I said, "Get your tapes updated. I don't know what's going to happen, but this is not good." And so, sure enough, Friday morning, we walk in, and there's a memo. A memo. Can't even say it to our face. Memo in our mailbox that says mandatory news meeting Monday morning. Report guaranteed. Cell phone's on a thing, or we didn't. So all weekend, we're all stewing, festering. Everybody's up there at the station working on our case, putting all of our stuff together. We have a feeling we know what's going to happen. So Monday morning, I go in and I start my operation. Says the news director slash 6 o'clock producer anchor, getting stuff ready for story and stuff, but knowing we're going to get fired. I knew. Sure enough, I'll go into the conference room. Gary called us in to start Carol. And he tells us, again, I'll never forget it. He says, "Friday night was your last." And so Mark brings up, "Hey, but you're going to have failed, or you know what, and you're good. You're all done." And said, "Carol's here to write you all severance check, get your things." And James cut check. We're all up in the middle of that kind of stuff. I had a Garfield fish tank. It was like a shaped like Garfield with belly that was and that's why I'm like, goldfish in my head that lived forever. Had it tucked under my arm. I got my wrestling figures and stuff that I'm clearing out of my office. And Mark looks at the check and says, "This is one." He said, "Two was paid here." So then we had to sit around and cut up checks. We all go, I think, we all go to the local bar and grill, if you will. It's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. We're sitting there, and we all are getting our happy hour. I remember sitting there, I wonder if people that are around watching us and saying, "Hey, that's the news." If they knew we were done, they never ever had to meet again. They ran into a market spot until they did officially switch affiliation in W HTF, I think, Huntsville Gator Fans. They moved to Huntsville. The building there closed, the pool got covered up when they went back. That's went back. The building is still there. And it was sad, one, the loss of life with Bruce, and two, the loss of the job. My wife was 4 months pregnant, so didn't have a pregnancy issue earlier here. I remember Gary sitting there saying, "You wanted me to be back. You wanted me to be back. I don't know. I wasn't less guilty about the fact that I
Gonna find a job. I want to get out of here. And start, I have already worked, obviously, that is a bunch of service. A story for the podcast, but I'm gonna read this last thing that this ended up being four days after. I guess the next day. WOWL ended its local news broadcast Monday in preparation. Gary Sneller of Atlanta, owner and general manager of the station, said establishing television on Monday. This is the part of it. Most of the new staff plans to seek jobs in other news operations, said Kathleen. We will help them in any way we can, he said. They have been terrific folks. Yes, we had been terrific folks. They didn't help at all. That day that he fired us all was the last time that we saw or heard anything from him or anybody that was in the So it was disappointing, you know, but obviously he couldn't go and say that. They didn't, the newspaper didn't comment from any of the people that were fired or affected or anything like that. So I left on a bitter note, but it took about 6 weeks and then I went and plucked it on the But got a job, you know, luckily my wife was working had been it all came to a sour end and I guess theoretically hindsight I could have thrown in the towel then and moved back to listen and could have done something else, got the job and stayed with it, keep with it. And I think in hindsight I stuck in the business. But I was So I think that's another thing. But I want to thank everyone for listening and watching this not less than perfect podcast. So I'll be back next week. Chad will likely join me probably more involved in some of the mental thoughts that I have right now. So thank you for tuning in and weighing in and letting me know what you want to hear. I will tell the WLFI West Lafayette story at some point. Get back more to the WSI audience there. So, playing there. I talked about doing the college years. Talk about that at some point. Maybe next month's non wrestling trip to be about that since it is that time. Heading into the college season. And then, of course, some folks want to hear market tips. Avoid available questions. Thanks for listening and or watching to this episode. We will see you.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.